Nicaragua's president starts a fourth consecutive term after an election the West called a sham. Critics say Daniel Ortega is a dictator, but his supporters reject this. So, what's next for one of the poorest nations in Central America? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. To some, Daniel Ortega is a dictator who's ruthlessly crushed all dissent in Nicaragua. He won a fourth straight term as president last November after jailing opposition candidates and banning international observers and journalists from the country. But his supporters say he's standing up to bullying from the West. The U.S. and EU imposed new sanctions just before Ortega was sworn in again on Monday. Most countries stayed away from the ceremony. But Ortega found support from Russia, Iran, Venezuela, and China. Nicaragua recently switched diplomatic ties from Taiwan to Beijing. Our Latin America editor, Lucia Newman, reports.
This was Daniel Ortega's fourth consecutive swearing-in ceremony. Flanked by his wife, Rosario Murillo, his vice president, he vowed to improve conditions in Nicaragua, the second poorest country in the Americas after Haiti.
We are here again with a clean slate to build peace, to assure that Nicaraguans have a dignified life, to eradicate poverty in this country with sovereignty and freedom.
The presidents of Cuba and Venezuela were there, and also delegations from Iran, Bolivia, Russia, and China. But Ortega was snubbed by almost everyone else. November's presidential elections have been dismissed as illegitimate by much of the international community. The majority of Ortega's competitors were imprisoned so they could not run, and thousands of others have gone into exile.
And legitimacy is not an issue for Ortega. He managed to essentially consummate his plan to establish a full and classic Latin American dictatorship in Nicaragua.
Hours before the ceremony, the European Union and the United States announced new sanctions against high-ranking military and communications officials, as well as members of the Ortega family. But exiled opponent Monica Baltodano, a former Sandinista commander who once fought alongside Ortega, questions their effectiveness.
They demonstrate that the international community realizes what's happening in Nicaragua, and that's why it imposes sanctions. They have a moral effect, a kind of consolation, but in practical terms, they'll have little impact.
While Ortega celebrated his latest inauguration, some 170 political prisoners languished in what human rights advocates describe as cruel and inhumane conditions. One of them is lawyer Roger Reyes.
My husband is losing his memory and is in a deep depression after spending more than 100 days in a punishment isolation cell. He can't remember the names or faces of our daughters.
Ortega made no mention of his pre-election promise to initiate a dialogue with his political opponents. That may explain why most Nicaraguans whom Al Jazeera consulted about the inauguration preferred to say nothing at all. Lucia Newman, Al Jazeera.
Daniel Ortega is now in the 15th year of his second stint in office. It cements his fourth term in a row, despite him leading an unpopular government. He came to power as a Sandinista guerrilla commander who helped overthrow a dictatorship and became president in 1985. In 1990, he lost to Violeta Chamorro, but returned to power in 2007 and has been president ever since. He consolidated his control using force to silence dissent while elevating his wife and loyalists to high positions. Poverty, natural disasters, and the pandemic led to a mass exodus of people from Nicaragua to the border with the United States over the past few years. Ortega has been blamed for not doing enough to strengthen the economy. All right, let's bring in our guests in the Nicaraguan capital, Managua, Danny Shaw, professor of Latin American and Caribbean Studies at City University of New York. In Sharjah, Jairo Lugo Ocando, director of Executive Education and Graduate Studies at Northwestern University in Qatar. And in Washington, D.C., Michael Shifter, president of Inter-American Dialogue. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining the program today. Michael, let me start with you. So hours before Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega was inaugurated, the U.S. and the EU imposed sanctions on members of his government. Who was targeted, and how were they targeted?
Well, this has been a continuation of a policy of targeting officials of the government for human rights violations. As your setup report indicated, there are political prisoners in Nicaragua, a substantial number. All the opposition candidates for November's elections are in jail. And this is a highly repressive, autocratic regime. And so those who have been responsible for those human rights violations, senior officials in the government, have been sanctioned. So that is the policy to try to apply pressure by the United States and by the European Union against these officials. Obviously, there is a very, very serious human rights crisis in Nicaragua, the likes of which Latin America hasn't seen for many, many years. And so that has been the response. Whether that changes the situation at all on the ground remains to be seen. But certainly there is, there are those who are responsible for this terrible situation, and they've been sanctioned.
Jairo, as Michael was just mentioning, the international community has issued sanctions against Ortega's government in the past. Were those sanctions in the past in any way effective? And do you think that these sanctions that were issued just before the inauguration will be effective?
Well, I agree with the assessment that of Ortega being, somebody who's definitely now in the realm of autocracy. And, nobody who puts in prison every single opponent that can run against him in a national election, presidential election, can be called a Democrat. And that's precisely what he does. However, I would say that Ortega has a very different base, power base to that of other autocrats in the regions like Maduro in Nicaragua or Canales de Castro's in Cuba. For once, the economy in Nicaragua has not done as bad. And for Latin American standards, that's actually good. There has been a reduction in poverty. We can debate if it's true that it's 50% of a cut in the past 10 years or not, but there has been some stability. And Ortega has been very skillful in developing interesting international networks. For example, he now closed relationships with Taiwan, and instead China established embassy there. That's something recently, and of course that came with lots of aid and commercial trade with China, which is now buying lots of the Nicaraguan products as a discount, but still giving them a relief from the U.S. and European Union sanctions. And the other base of power that Ortega has, and we can't forget this, is that since the Sandinista revolution, the Ortegas have never relinquished the power in the army. Remember that even when Violeta de Chamorro won the elections in 1990, Ortega's brother stayed as the head of the armed forces. And that power of the Sandinista, of that group of the Sandinista, not of the old Sandinista, but of the Ortegas over the armed forces has continued today. He governs mm-hmm. in the same way that Maduro was in Venezuela, with a stronghold mm-hmm. on the army, which is why I don't think the sanctions are going to be that effective.
Danny, you heard Jairo there talk about the alliances between President Ortega and the Venezuelan president and the Cuban president. The Venezuelan president, the Cuban president, they were both there at the inauguration to show their support. China, Russia, Iran, they also sent delegations. There's a lot of talk right now about international isolation, but Ortega still has support as well, correct?
Greetings from Managua. We don't live in that same unipolar world of 1990 and 1991 with the collapse of the Soviet Union. Nicaragua doesn't depend on the U.S. I think U.S. sanctions at this point and the intensification of sanctions are not going to be as cruel as they've been in the past against Cuba, against Venezuela, because we now have this pluripolar world. We have China as a camp, Russia as a diplomatic economic camp, the Bolivarian countries. We have things shifting to the left across South America, in Chile, in Honduras, in Peru. So I don't think that these blockades, one-fourth of the world's people wake up every morning under U.S. blockades. These blockades are not as effective as they were, for example, in 1991 in Cuba, where Cuba was left with absolutely no other trading partners.
Michael, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has said that the U.S. and its partners will deploy diplomatic and economic tools to support the restoration of democracy and respect for human rights in Nicaragua. So I want to ask you, I mean, what else, as far as by the U.S., can be done at this point, and what kind of pressure can be applied by the U.S. and by other countries to try to make a difference?
Well, first, let me say that I think that is very, very difficult, frankly. This is a regime, as your setup piece showed, that's quite entrenched. I agree with the analysis that, you know, the armed forces is a pillar of Ortega's support. I don't think he's popular. The polls that I've seen shows that he has about 20-25% of the Nicaraguans who support him. And in Venezuela, Maduro has about 12-13%. He has cemented ties with People's Republic of China and broken with Taiwan. He does rely on Russia. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the situation is deteriorating. You know, 170,000 Nicaraguans left in the last year, about 80,000 of those to the United States. That's unprecedented. They're going to Costa Rica. So people are fleeing the regime. There's a widespread sense of fear and terror. And in that context, the tools available are not, are not great. Sanctions, I don't disagree with what's been said, that it's unclear how effective they're going to be. I understand why they're being invoked and applied, but, I'm certainly not confident that's gonna make a change in Ortega's behavior. But I think there has to be more, you know, I think international pressure is important. It's good. But we know from experience that international pressure is only successful to the extent that there's an internal national opposition force in Nicaragua. And today, that opposition force is largely in jail. The leaders are in jail with no due process, with no serious charges, with a justice system that's completely controlled by the repressive regime. And so, first of all, there needs to be a regrouping of some sort of opposition force internally. And the role that external actors can play, I think, is limited, but it can be helpful to that end. Mm-hmm. And so I think there needs to be diplomatic pressure. I think more can be done with the Organization of American States. Mm-hmm. There have been tough resolutions, but I think there could be more in pressure internally. And I'll just take one other thing that I think is important, that you mentioned Honduras. Honduras will have a new government, and that government, I think, is going to be less supportive of Ortega than the previous government of Juan Orlando Hernandez. And that may affect Nicaragua's ability to get funds and financing from the Central American Bank with the change in government in Honduras. So there are pressures, I think, from financial institutions and diplomatically that can make a difference. But I agree, it's extremely, extremely difficult.
Jairo, I saw you nodding along to some of what Michael was saying there when he was talking about that from his perspective, there needs to be some sort of regrouping when it comes to the opposition in Nicaragua. So I want to ask you if you think that's something that's possible, whether in the short term or the long term.
Let me be very clear for those of who still defend Ortega's regime or the Cuban regime or the Venezuelan regime. If there was an open and transparent election in any of these countries, the government would lose to anybody in the position, anybody. Now, having said that, Ortega is a different creature to Maduro and Canales and Castro in Cuba. in the sense that he does have a segment of support. He, you know, as Mike was mentioning, his support is a bit higher than other autocrats in the region. But having said that, there's no doubt, zero doubt. It's a factual truth that if there was an open and transparent election, Ortega would lose, which is why he put in prison every single one of the person who could actually compete against him in the past elections. The sanctions sanctions per se has worked. I mean, people always try to dismiss sanctions. Let's not dismiss them. Let's remember that sanctions were the tools that enable us to get rid of the apartheid system in South Africa. And always is preferable to the previous military interventions. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants military intervention. Nobody wants violence in this case. But there is the need for the international community to act speedily, quickly, to counter the hegemony of Ortega. The United States continues to be, despite all this, despite the sanctions, despite all this, mm-hmm. the United States continues to be the main provider of food of Nicaragua. Nicaragua is not self-sufficient. The latest report from the United States Agriculture Department highlights the fact that there's a record increase in food pushing from the United States grain, particularly grain, to Nicaragua in the previous year. This is a fact. So the United States sanctions will have an effect on Nicaragua. There's no doubt about that. And the question here is more the European Union. The Chinese, the Iranians, they're too far away.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Let me get back to you about that point that you're making about the other sanctions as well in just a moment, because we are starting to run out of time. Danny, let me ask you, you know, Jairo was just saying there that if elections had been held properly, that President Ortega would have lost. I want to ask you what your viewpoint is on that. How popular is Ortega in Nicaragua right now? And are there credible achievements that are being ignored by the international community?
I feel like Jairo and Michael have directly decontextualized recent Nicaraguan history and over a century of Nicaraguan history. The U.S. has done everything to intervene in Nicaragua. There was the 1980s Contra War, one of the great crimes of the 20th century. 2018 was a U.S. proxy war. It was an internationalized civil war where bandits, where terrorists with U.S. backing, some related to NGOs that had, at least on the surface, an innocent appearance. They attacked and burned Sandinista universities and Sandinista homes. So Nicaragua's been under great duress. It's Nicaragua's right to protect itself through its armed forces, through the police, against these would-be coup mongers. They resisted a coup in 2018, and Nicaragua continues to develop women's projects, peasant projects. And I've been traveling to Nicaragua since 2005, and I see something completely different than what Jairo and Michael have described.
Jairo, I saw you reacting to what was being said there. Please go ahead.
He's basically saying that every single candidate of the position is a CIA agent or something. And this is a traditional thing that people say about these regimes, that everybody's a member of the CIA, that everything is a conspiracy. I'm absolutely aware of the history, you know, since Walker invaded Nicaragua in the 19th century. You want to talk about invasions, about U.S. intervention. Nobody wants a U.S. intervention. But the truth is, not all these candidates are members of the CIA or plotting against them. Many of them were legitimate, even left-wing candidates, and they were all in prison. How can you explain that? Are you saying that all of them are CIA agents? All of them are part of a conspiracy?
An individual like Dora Maria Tellez was a terrorist, and she bombed buildings, and she had trucks of armed bandits. The U.S. would put those individuals in jail, or maybe they wouldn't, because we have the case of January 6th, but no people is allowed to lead a violent coup against a democratically elected government, as we saw in 2018, but they resisted that proxy war.
Michael, let me ask you, at his inauguration, President Ortega announced that Nicaragua and China had just signed a series of strategic agreements that would include officially incorporating Nicaragua into Beijing's Global Belt and Road Initiative, as well as other trade programs. How much do you think that's going to help Nicaragua, and how much does that concern the United States?
Well, look, the United States, obviously, there are global tensions with China, and I think China's increasing influence and expansion in all of Latin America is something that's certainly high on the agenda, political policy agenda in the United States. And the United States has to be, you know, competitive with China and has to make a better offer than China. I just think that the prospects for economic development are not great, no matter who is involved in Nicaragua, given the incredible deterioration in the country. If people are leaving in droves and it's turned into a complete police state, these are not great conditions for investment and economic prosperity. These are conditions for a country that's going to continue to decline economically, socially, where people that want to leave, economic opportunities and the like. I think the significance of the China shift is more geopolitical, there could be major projects that China provides in Nicaragua, like it's done in other countries. But this is no substitute for economic development. And if you're interested in social economic development and the improvement of people's living standards, this is not a formula to do it. This is a police state. It's turned into a pariah. You may defend it, but it's, you know, on principle and the dignity of the Nicaraguans. But the fact is the humanitarian conditions there are very dire and are only likely to get worse no matter what happens. So I think one has to focus on that, on the Nicaraguan people, and they wouldn't be leaving in droves like they are today if there weren't for the economic problems and the political repression and people just being very, very frightened.
Danny, it looked to me like you were reacting to some of what Michael was saying there when he was talking about the worsening humanitarian and economic crises going on in Nicaragua. Go ahead.
Well, whenever we talk about the subject of migration, we have to put it in its proper context, which is centuries of colonialism and neocolonialism. And the reality that the money in the north is worth more than the money here across Central America and Latin America. But I see in Nicaragua very different than the diatribes or the constant vilification that we hear from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the CNN and Fox. I see a Nicaraguan people who continue to build an alternative system, an anti-capitalist system. I see a Nicaragua fortified every day by these new relationships with Vietnam, China, Russia. No longer can the U.S. control the world and realize its unipolar hegemonic dreams because of this constant growing unity among the blockaded states. So we see Iran trading with Venezuela, Venezuela finding Russia, Russia finding Nicaragua, and on and on.
Jairo, let me ask you, we've talked in this program about the countries that have taken a stance against President Ortega. We've talked about the countries that are supporting him right now. Are there other countries that are trying to make diplomatic inroads with Ortega and trying to sway him in that way through diplomacy?
Yeah, the big player here in the plot, the person who can actually have an impact, Obrador has been an ally, open ally of Ortega in many ways, although they just had a rift about if he was going to go for the inauguration or not. But at the end, they did send a representative. Mm-hmm. López Obrador will have a very important role to play in trying to bring Ortega back to the table of negotiations. I just want to make two additional points for what I've been discussing here. First of all, the role of China. Now, paradoxically, China could be detrimental to Nicaragua because the biggest Nicaraguan project is a second canal, the canal of Nicaragua, which will unify the Pacific and Atlantic through Nicaragua. And the people who are less interested in that project are the Chinese because they already control the Panama Canal.
Jairo, I'm very sorry. We have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. But thanks so much to all of our guests, Danny Shaw, Jairo Lugo Ocando, and Michael Shifter. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.